Tarry here, where the stories never grow old, and you hear something new every time they are told and it comes clear. So tarry here, where it doesn't matter your age, and when we gather round the table, we all take the stage year after year. So tarry here.
Welcome to the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenedradio.org. I'm Fanny Crawford.
And I'm Stosh Zielkowski.
And our theme today on January 30th, 2023 is reunions, people,
wow,
place, and purpose. We'll see how that flaps out.
Are you talking about how we talk?
Well, I'm talking about flapping for sure. How are you, Mr. Z?
I am fine. I'm having fun having fires in the fireplace.
Oh.
What'd you say? Yeah. Oh,
yesterday I created a kind of new...
starting their program here.
I don't know, not a device. Well, sort of a device hooked onto some wooden pieces, because I've been thinking about when I'm cutting wood, you know, we get wood delivered a certain length and it's too big for our fire, too long for our fireplace. So I have to cut it all in half, and cutting it with a chainsaw. I found it was uncomfortable a little bit, you know. So I devised this device where I could pile 10, 12 pieces of wood into a wedge-shaped device. And then when I cut through the middle of it with the chainsaw, I don't have to worry about it bouncing around and stuff like that. And it worked. I'm going to improve it in the next day or two by making sure it's more solid and all, but it really worked. So that was really, that was pleasant. You know, I like to rely on my science background and experience to make jobs easier. So, and it did make it easier to cut some wood. And also we had our chimney cleaned this week, and the guy was so helpful because I've been trimming bark off of the wood that we had delivered. And he said, you have hardwood. You don't have to trim the bark.
Yeah, I never did that.
What, trim the bark?
Yeah.
Well, you know.
Is it smoky?
No. Maybe a little, but no problem whatsoever. And I didn't think there would be a problem, but I wasn't sure. And in reading, you know, people who sell firewood, they like you to think that the firewood should be trimmed and all neat, because the cleaner it is from them, the more money they can charge you, which makes sense, you know. But he said, you know, he looked at a couple pieces of wood I had in the house. He said, this is good hardwood and the bark is going to burn fine. So he said, just try it. And if you don't like the way it burns, don't. But anyway.
That's interesting.
Most of the time I use wood in a couple of fireplaces, but you know, mostly my experience with wood is heating a house for 8 years with a wood stove in the basement, and there I guess I basically didn't care whether it made smoke or not, because it was inside the stove and it went up out of the chimney and all that stuff. So anyway, I've had fun with that. And I don't work too hard at the wood. Yeah, I do a little bit. I do a little bit. So,
you know. Good. Okay. Well, I did want to thank Andy Offit-Irwin for his introduction to the show, Tarry Here, singing us into being to start out the show each week. Thank you, Andy.
Yep. And a beautiful way to begin, especially with him doing it.
Yeah, since we don't have to.
That's right. And if we did, you never know.
So are you going to start us out today with a story? Are you going to talk about the Speak Series?
Well, I was going to mention Speak Series because in 15 days, 2 weeks from tomorrow, we will have the beginning of our 11th season in our new home. We actually have a place to do it. We don't have to do it strictly on Zoom. And so we have a residence now. We will be in the Opera House in Shepherdstown, which has been redesigned, refixed, everything. And we will be the first event there. And that's on Valentine's Day, which is a nice way to do it. And our guest storyteller will be Priscilla Howe. And I'm excited about that because Priscilla performed at my festival in Arkansas in 2011 and did a really good job. And she is a fine storyteller, well known around the country. And the new setup is going to be that we will do two shows a month on the second Tuesday and then on the Wednesday that follows that. So it'll be the second Tuesday and then the next day, two shows at the Opera House. And the Tuesday show will be a live performance as well as a Zoom performance. So people can get a Zoom ticket or they can get a ticket to go and be in, you know, in the presence of the storyteller. And then on Wednesday, there will be only a live performance. Many of the storytellers this season will be doing two different performances. So that'll be exciting. So instead of having, once a month, it'll be two different performances, 2 days in a row. And people can go to speakstoryseries.com and get all the information and even might, you know, if they are interested in it and they're story lovers like you and me and, you know, a lot of people we know, they could get season tickets. And I'm sure you must have your season ticket already.
No, I do not.
I'm sorry.
But it's
I couldn't resist that.
I'm so far behind.
You're really busy, I know. And, you know, but anyway, I'm looking forward to it. And I may, Priscilla will be performing also on Wednesday at the Morgan Academy in Shepherdstown. And I believe I'm going to be taking her there.
Good.
And bringing her back. So that'll be fun. I enjoy doing that because it gives me some time with the storytellers and I get to see another performance. And I don't have to pay for it. So, and she'll be doing it with younger people there at the Morgan Academy. And she is wonderful with children. She does puppets and things. And she also does stories in different language, at least two different languages, two languages, English and one of the Bavarians. I'm not sure what the other language is because my mind doesn't work as well as it did in 2011. But she really did a great performance at our festival in Arkansas where she told a story in English and then repeated the story in this other language. And it was amazing to hear the story in a different language and understand it, mostly because of the rhythm and the movements and stuff like that. It was a short story, but it was pretty interesting because when she first said she was going to do it, I thought, well, that's not going to do me any good. I don't speak that language, but it was a nice experience. And and then 4 weeks after that, another one of my very favorite performers, Connie Reagan Blake, will be here. And I'm looking forward to, I hope I'll be able to take her to the school where she's going to perform on either the Tuesday or Wednesday. I'm not sure about that detail yet. But she'll be doing a Tuesday night performance and a Wednesday performance. So, and we have a great lineup for the rest of the year, but I'm not going to bother reading that because I'm a great believer, and I don't think anybody pays attention past maybe the second person, unless I mention a name that happens to be their grandfather or aunt or something.
So. Okay, Stas.
I'm glad you can laugh.
Well, we're 10 minutes into the show, so you think it's time for a story?
I think so.
Would you like to start?
I will. And I'm hoping that this will fit the theme, which is
reunions, people, right. Place, and purpose.
Just wonderful. That's like a great introduction. All right, so here I go. Back in the early 90s, someone in my family, the Ziolkowski family, and anybody who wound up in that family, married to that family in some way, started a family reunion. There hadn't been one, to my knowledge, ever. But I attended that family reunion, and it was in a public park, and they rented a pavilion. And I don't know, there were probably 40 people, maybe a few more, maybe. So anyway, when we got to the reunion, it was nice. I got to see some cousins, I got to see my uncles, some aunts, and my sister was there. It was nice. And after that, on the way home, I kept thinking, you know, I think I'm of a good enough age at the time, I was thinking this, that I could host a family reunion. I had a nice piece of property, a large front yard, too large as far as I was concerned, had to mow it all the time, take care of it. But, a nice front yard, lots of trees, enough sunlight and shade to be comfortable wherever you wanted to be. I worked on it, and I decided, I checked with a couple of people in the family what they thought about it because of travel, but where I was not far from Baltimore, and so as Baltimore was kind of a central location for a lot of members of the family, everybody I talked to said, that sounds like a great idea, you know. We don't have to pay for a pavilion or anything. So anyway, I talked to a couple of people about doing that and went through some organizational stuff, you know, suggested everybody bring their own food, everybody bring their own drink, and we would provide the place and bathrooms and stuff like that, you know, the necessities. And we also, you know, had some snacks kind of things, and made sure we had plenty of liquid refreshments so that everybody would be happy and we wouldn't have anybody left out in case they drove off from their house in Pennsylvania or Virginia or someplace and forgot the food. I've heard that at reunions. Oh, we had this great, you know, but okay. So, I thought, in talking about this reunion, I said, there were some things that I thought were specifically funny. I had a small end of a family farm. I owned 3 acres of it at the time and had a couple of horses. And I had built a barn big enough to shelter the horses during the wintertime. And my oldest uncle, when they showed up, my two oldest uncles that like walked the place and discussed different things. And he said, yeah, where are the bathrooms going to be? I said, well, we have a bathroom in the basement of the house and we have one upstairs. And I figured we would use the upstairs bathroom for ladies and downstairs bathroom for men. And my oldest uncle that was there said, well, it's kind of, he said, well, I don't know why any of the guys have to go in the house. They can just go behind the barn there. it became kind of a theme. And that wasn't quite necessary. However, it turned out that I believe a number of the males who attended probably used that option rather than go into the back of the house and then to the lower level. But the main thing I knew I had to have ready for this reunion was a good solid card table set on the driveway, a nice paved driveway, card table set out there, lights, made sure that there was a good light. We did have a nice light lamp pole right there so you could see clearly walking into the house. And because my uncles, and if my dad had been alive, my dad, of course, my dad and his two brothers and their uncle, who had passed away by this time, played cards every other week during good weather, and then every 4 weeks in bad weather. And that card game moved around. And they would play from Friday evening. They would come to the house. When they came to our house, I experienced it there and a couple other places. One of my uncle's houses, I came home from college to attend the game just for fun. And they would start the game at 8 o'clock. It was almost like a job to them. They would get to the house. They might get to your house at 6:30, something like that, have a sandwich or something, just talk around, catch up on all the news. And then at 8 o'clock, they would be at that card table with their money out and their chips and everything. So it was really funny when I first attended one of those games, which was the first time I ever attended a game, was in our kitchen in Baltimore. And I was a kid, I was young, and I was told by old Uncle Frank, my dad's uncle, that as long as I was quiet and didn't distract him, I could stay in the kitchen and watch the game. And it was fun for me because he was a grumpy old guy, but he was also fun, and he would tell great stories, some I should not have been listening to. My father reminded him a couple times that mom was close by and he should watch himself, and because she didn't like bad language and that. But he's the kind of guy that in the middle of the game, this happened twice at our house, he was fussing about his nephews, just taking all his money, and he didn't know about the cars. He thought they were fixed or something. And one of those games, he said to my father, can he go to the store for me? And my dad said, sure, he can go. The store's just a block away. He said, he pulled out, I don't know, probably gave me $2. And he said, go to the store and get a couple new decks of cards. I think these things are no good. So my dad told me, good to go. I went to the drugstore and he told me that they would have, poker cards and they would have playing cards. So I went and came back, and, I don't think it had anything to do with me or the new cards or anything, but old Uncle Frank gave me the old cards, and in the next hour or so, he bragged a number of times about how smart he was for sending me to get new cards because he started to win. It was very entertaining. I believe I was probably about 9 or 10 years old, if that. And of course, so anyway, that's a great memory of mine. Always, always, always. So back to our up into the future, into our reunion at our place. We had tables and chairs set out for the card game. And the card game My uncles, my dad, my uncles, and one or two of the cousins would play in the game. And I don't think I ever attended a family event of any kind except a funeral where my uncles, my dad, and at least one cousin weren't playing cards. I can remember so many nights as a young person being at one of my aunt's houses or my uncle's houses, and the men in the basement playing cards and the women upstairs. And in the early days, television wasn't that great. And it also didn't go into the early morning hours. And they often would have the women would often pick one of the children, sometimes me, and say, go downstairs and tell your father it's time to go home. And and I like doing it. At first, I was a little afraid to do it the first time, but I like doing it because the men would always say, oh yeah, this is the last hand, we're almost done. And 45 minutes or so later, I'd be sent down to that again. So I knew that was going to happen at the reunion. There was nobody going to tell them that the game should be over at the reunion, because we scheduled a reunion from 11 in the morning until dark. And there was no ending hour, really, which we should have set that up, but we didn't. And it turned out that we had to make different changes over the years. So we had our tables and chairs set on the lawn. Everybody who showed up at the reunion brought their own table, picnic tables kind of things, and folding chairs and stuff. And in 1992, the first reunion that I hosted, we had over 120 people there. Aunts, uncles, cousins, girlfriends, boyfriends, children, and a few animals. I didn't know what to say about animals, but I thought, you know, we had a few animals, and so it didn't make sense to say you shouldn't bring animals as long as they're well-behaved. And I made a point of that in the invitation. And in the years that I did this, never had a problem with animals. Never. The people who did bring animals had well-trained animals, were, and they behaved themselves. One of the things that caused a big problem at this reunion, we did this reunion in 92, 93, 94, 95, is, and I really got into it, on the front of the barn at the top. Now, this was a small barn. It was only 16 feet square and about 10 feet high, maybe 11. But on the very front of it, just like it was, you know, fancy store, hotel or something, I made a big sign. It took me a few weeks to get it ready. I framed it, had our family name, Ziolkowski, in it. And at the beginning, before the Z in Ziolkowski, I had a big 92 painted in a different color so it would show. And you could see it from the road, which is about 150 feet away. And our driveway was a nice long driveway. So anyway, that was a big hit, because especially with the older people, they liked being able to pull into the driveway, and as they drove up towards the house, and also off to the side parking in a field, which I made sure was nice and fixed up okay, got rid of a lot of rocks and stuff, they could see the family name, and they thought that was really, especially some of the my aunts and female cousins thought that was nice. I don't think most of the guys cared one way or the other. They knew. I know one of my uncles said right away, "That's nice. That sign looks good, but everybody knows where they were going." It was, you know, and it made sense when the way he said it. One of the things that I hadn't really thought about, but as soon as one of my cousins got there, who got there early, Bobby, he said, "Hey, where's the fire pit?" And I was like, oops, I didn't even think about that. I had a place behind the house right near the field where we could cook things, you know, with a small fireplace I built out of old bricks and stuff. But I realized I should have made some provision for that. It turned out that through a little bit of what's the word, dickering, I think dickering is one of those things, with my partner at the time, we, in the center of the front lawn, we dug the lawn up, you know, and I got Bobby and another a couple of the cousins who got there early, helped me with some stones and that, and in no time at all, we had a nice fire pit, which took quite a bit of work to repair, because that front lawn was important to other people. Not so much to me. I would have gladly had a fire pit in the entire lawn so that I didn't have to mow it. But everybody brought lots of food. It was wonderful and was a great experience, because as the host and anybody in the family could just walk from table to table to different family groups and say hello and swap stories and stuff, and also share in some of the goodies. And so you could taste all kind of wonderful dishes. And my family was Polish. Even they and married a lot of people who were Polish, and some who weren't Polish, a number of Italians. The food was always wonderful, absolutely wonderful. There was always some music, you know, somebody always brought a guitar, or, you know, and one of my cousins was a great photographer. In the 4 years that I had this reunion, at the after the reunion each year, he would send me a nice package of pictures, and he always made sure that everyone who was in attendance got their picture taken, and he would go to the trouble of sending each one of them a picture if they wanted it, you know. And I always thought that was really nice. So my first year, everything went real well. The biggest problem we had the first year was that fire pit. Digging a hole that was, I bet that fire pit was a good 5 feet across, maybe six. It did mess up the lawn because it was right in the middle. couldn't have it near the edge because of the trees. It was right in the middle in a nice open spot. Of course, everybody left. I think it was by midnight, everybody was gone. A couple of the years of that reunion, there were people after midnight, and I was the only one awake in the house with them. And it didn't bother me any, you know, because we always did the reunion on the Saturday, and Sunday I was off. And so, you know, and I wasn't refereeing anymore or playing ball anymore, so I didn't have to do anything except, you know, go to church or sleep in and enjoy it. But they went pretty late. But then the next day, the one job I did wind up doing all alone was get my tractor out and my put the cart and collect those rocks that lived. They were big rocks, and they lived in our field in one corner, and take them back to where they lived. And then I did learn something about repairing the lawn. I'm not sure I did a good job, but I had to put the grass back down, water, seed, and all that. One of the thing that most fun for me about hosting a family reunion was, I don't think I sat very long, except for one of the 4 years. I did play cards for a couple hours with my uncles, They would have liked me to stay there the whole time, but I felt necessary to go and visit different parts of the family and introduce myself, because there were people there who had no idea who I was, you know, with over 120 people. And each year there were, we had the same group and sometimes added. Well, on the second year, something started, because their kids didn't have much to do, you know. There were a lot of kids didn't have much to do. The first year I organized a walk down to the bridge not far from us, where the water that ran under that bridge was part of the reservoir water that fed for Baltimore City, and took the kids on a long walk with a couple of the cousins, a couple of the lady cousins, who thought that was a good idea with the kids, because, you know, maybe they had one of the kids or some, and told them some stories which they liked. But I realized that there had to be something more. So on the second, third, and fourth reunion that I held, I made sure that my tractor was in good shape. I made sure that my cart was clean, and I fixed some seats in the cart, like little benches on the side. And on the second, third, and fourth reunion, I gave rides in the cart around our property. And since the property passed our 3 acres, belonged to an uncle from the other side of the family, from a different side of the family. Not my family, but my wife's family at the time. And so I could take the kids for a good 40-minute ride. And they loved it. And they were very well behaved. They lined up. I always made sure that I had a couple of, it was easy to get a couple of 11 or 12-year-olds and ask them to be in charge and make sure that children didn't fall out of the cart and all that stuff. And they just loved it, because I was the only adult on most of those rides. Sometimes a mother might want to go because they had a younger child, but I'd give the kids some fun. You know, behind our house in the field, there were a couple places where there was nice dips and things. And so I could shake them up just a little bit, go a little faster here and there, and stop going through. There was a part that was wooded, and I could tell them about the evil people that live in those woods, but they're not there in the daytime, so we didn't have to worry about it. And throw in a couple scary things about it. The kids loved that. One of the big treats for me about using the cart was I had a couple of concerned adults who said, "You've been doing that with the kids for hours. You should take a break." And I said, "Nope, I'm having fun. This is what I enjoy." I said, "That's sitting around and, you know, and eating and all that talk and stuff, that's not as much fun as being with the children. I like that." So during the third reunion, one of the young women in the family had a boyfriend. By young women, I mean she was in her probably late 20s. She had a boyfriend who had a truck that had a ride on it, like these things you see at carnivals and stuff. And it was small little carts that moved around the back of the truck and all that. Yeah. And she convinced him he should bring it, and then I wouldn't have to drive the, well, even though he did bring this thing, it was a sort of a monster, and it was a lot of trouble. And he didn't want to give kids rides more than once. He wanted every kid to have one ride, period. Well, you know, you can't do that with kids, especially since it was free. You know, if you go take kids to the carnival, you can say, "Well, you know, that costs $1 every time you get on that thing. I'll have to work extra hours this week or something." But that doesn't work when nobody's charging. But he only would do it. And I understand that. He, you know, it was his business ride and all that. But I still ran my tractor and cart. And the kids didn't care about that ride. I had a number of kids say, it's not as fun as being back here on the cart and bouncing around and all that stuff, you know, because it was really for little kids. So anyway, after 4 years, after the fourth year, it began to be difficult getting ready each year because not everybody was as thrilled as I was to have the reunion there. And there was always a discussion, and even up to the end of the fourth year, there was some fuss about, well, I don't want that hole in the front yard anymore. That's probably, no, the grass doesn't grow back. We still had it because I was in charge, which is one of my favorite things to be. And I'm not in charge of anything anymore, so that's better. Anyway, 4 years, the reunion was very popular, and it worked real well, and the family was happy. But due to personal requirements and, I guess, problems, I would say, in 1995 was the last year for me hosting a family reunion because I was no longer going to be living there. And one of my nephews took it over. I gave him the sign. He gladly got the sign. You know, I reminded him how nice it was and he should take good care of it. And so he had it at his house I think he had it there for 2 years, maybe three. And then it sort of went away. So while we had it, it was great. It was fun. A lot of work, but more fun afterwards. It was kind of like after a hard event, you forget about all the pain and trouble, you know. So so the Ziolkowski family reunion moved on. And I think for many years, there wasn't one. And over a period of time, from 1996, I guess, on till, I moved around. I lived in a number of different homes, a number of different places. And I haven't attended a family reunion since, but I have great memories of the food, of my uncles enjoying their card game where no one could tell them it's time to go home. And I was always very happy and proud that I was able to do that.
That's a lovely stash. Well, I wish I had been there, the fly on the wall.
You would have enjoyed it. You would have enjoyed it. I'm sure you would have been able, you would have met some people that were interesting. You would have gotten some stories.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because there were people telling stories there, all kinds. Cool. One of the interesting things about something like that is if you walk around, you know, sort of don't interfere with anybody as far as they're telling something, even if just a family story or something, you could hear a whole lot of history and get a whole lot of information about what's going on.
Yeah. So. Family reunions are definitely the best.
Yeah.
Very cool. You did a good thing.
Thank you. I feel proud of that. There are people that told me my dad would have been very proud of me. So.
You've been listening to the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenedradio.org. I'm Fanny Crawford.
And I'm Stas Ziolkowski.
And our theme today is reunions, people, place, and purpose. And Stas just told us a lovely memory of years when you did the family reunion at your place.
Right. And took a lot of time.
Yeah, sure.
I hope your story is...
Let's make that clear. Oh, you mean time the story took. No, oh, I thought you meant the time it took to put the reunion together. Time intensive, no doubt about that.
Yeah, it is.
Oh, I have plenty of time.
But, okay. So now we're going to hear from you.
Yeah, So I just got back from my winter reunion. That's a retreat at Kekapen Resort State Park outside Berkeley Springs in West Virginia. And I told a bit about the years past retreats last week on the show. And I talked about the 12 women who are the regulars there, the ones who give me the opportunity to learn from them. They are mostly really skilled artisans, craftswomen, and learn about myself. And the woman who's the acknowledged founder of the group, she's the one who had the brainstorm and put it together. And they've been going almost 40 years. Or no, that's not right, 20 years. But she talked about Kekapen State Park as a place where she grew up. Her dad was from Chicago, grew up in Chicago, and was sent to trade school, she says, because he kept screwing up his academics. He was never a successful student, but he ended up as administrator of Naval Sea Systems, the NSS. And he was, according to Mary, his daughter, he was the first non-admiral, to administer that unit. So she grew up in a family where there were frequent naval officers coming to Thanksgiving dinner and coming to visit and work with her dad, and what she calls other eccentric high-ranking military officials. She talked about the British switchboard operator who would often stay overnight at their house because on holidays there were not many people around in the barracks that she was living in, and she didn't feel safe there on her own. So she would come and sleep at their house. And she says her dad just created a environment where there was a different feeling and culture and interest in world events and in building community that she was aware was not the standard for most of the world. Out of that experience at Kekapen, where they would vacation every summer, she pulled together a group of women artisans who were part of a co-op at Schifferstadt, the historical stone building at Baker Park in Frederick in the 1980s. And a group of those women began meeting regularly at Kekapen and renting up to four cabins. At one point, there were four cabins, each holding four women. Eventually, that kind of settled down to be three cabins, and that's who comes now. So those 12 women who reside in the three cabins for the week that were there are really important to me. This was my either my ninth or 10th year there. One of our number makes a wine glass for each of us. She paints wine glasses, and each year there's a different theme. And I have 11 wine glasses now, although I've only been going for 9 or 10 years. So Kirsch, who makes the wine glasses, has gifted me with a couple from years that I was not there because she wanted me to have a more complete set than what I had. So she's given me a couple extras. And each year there's a different design on the glasses that she paints herself. The other thing that's really interesting about Mary, who was the inspiration or the founder for this group, is that she and her husband have built a homestead not far away on the other side of Berkeley Springs. And that she talks about the cottage and the work building that they built next door to the original cottage that was there when they bought the property, that she sees that as a new paradigm for housing as you age in place. And she's doing everything, she and her husband are doing everything they can to make that the place where they end their years. and I've been there several times. It's hard to get to. And when there's snow on the ground, it's a really interesting place to travel to. But they're making it snug and inventing ways of traveling in and out to make sure they can get out in emergencies. So all of that is part of the experience for me. But I came up with three things, I guess, I want to talk about as about this year's reunion. And I've labeled those three sections in a very pompous manner: caring for my soul, caring for my body, and caring for my community, because I am prone to pompous statements. And why should I not take advantage of that? Talking about reunions, people, place, and purpose. So when I started writing down my thoughts about this year's time at Kekapen, I started with the craziness of being away for 6 days, being away from home, and what it takes for me, as scattered and over scheduled as I am, what it takes for me to get out and into the cabin that I sleep in at Kekapen. So Monday, January 16th, I spoke with a couple of my cabin mates to plan our the main dinner that we would be hosting. So each night, a different cabin hosts a dinner until we're through the cycle, and then we start eating leftovers and whipping up special little single dishes to surprise and please people. But the night that we host, the first night that we host, is probably the most important, and it takes a lot of planning and conversation to agree on the menu and what kinds of activities we will be planning. That's also the day that we had our radio show was on a Monday. And so I was already thinking about the event for that week, and I told stories on air about the reunion. Tuesday of that week, I went to my Toastmasters meeting in Frederick. I had to get up at 4 to be there and make breakfast for that group. It's an early morning meeting. And then later in the day, my daughter and I met with a lawyer and a trust officer because we're working on straightening out my daughter's finances. She has disability stipends. She gets some benefits, and trying to make all of that work out with the family finances is complicated. So we were doing that. On Wednesday, I had a 45-minute Zoom call with storyteller Jane Dorfman. That was Jane initiating that call. We've been trying to get together for more than a week, and it was only on Wednesday before I left for the Kekapen adventure that I managed to hook up with her. There were other things, other family events going on that day, and I was already starting to pack and figure out what food I needed to do my part of the dinners there. So that was a pretty busy day. On Thursday, I had a massage with a new kinesthesiologist that I've met recently, and learned a lot from him. Had a 90-minute session with him. And I had the opportunity to do another massage at Kekapen, but I opted out of that at the last minute just because I was still glowing from that experience back in Hagerstown, and decided I wanted quiet time, a quiet solo time, rather than doing another body experience. Also on Thursday that week, I had my last health meeting, my TOPS meeting, Take Off Pound Sensibly meeting. That's always a big deal for me every week because it's another kind of reunion. There are 9 of us in that group, mostly women. There are a couple men. And I needed to make sure that they had what they needed from me so that they could do their meeting the next Thursday without me, because I would be at Kekapen, of course. And that's when I started cleaning up the house. So Jose, my husband, would not have to deal with all my clutter. I had been packing and unpacking and repacking things, and I had all kinds of art supplies and fiber supplies and food, and the kitchen was a mess. So I started beginning to clean up so I wouldn't be a total loss as a spouse. I took off. Friday was another traveling day where I was trying to run errands and clean up last minute things. But Sunday was my departure day. So most of Saturday I spent packing and making phone calls and trying to make sure that everything that I would not be able to do over the next week would be taken care of. And I ended up gift wrapping until 3 o'clock in the morning, my contribution to the to the giveaways for the Kekapan retreat. And I'll say a little bit more about that further into the story. Sunday, I intended to leave Hagerstown at about 1 or 2 o'clock. I was hoping for 1 o'clock so I would get to Kekapan early, because Mary, our founder, is particular about everybody being there on time. And more than half the time in the 10 years I've been going, I'm late. I'm often the latest person to arrive. Sometimes I forget things and have to drive back halfway to pick up things that I've forgotten. Well, that didn't happen this time. But I was helping my daughter clean her apartment before I left, because I usually see her twice a week to help her run errands and things like that. And this time I would not be seeing her during the week. So we had a lot to do, and I was just really late getting out. So I was feeling guilty about being so late. And when I finally arrived, I was not the last person to arrive, which warmed my heart, but I still felt guilty about not being there in time when everybody was unloading. I'm often the last person to unload. But Sunday night was a good night. The first night, the first group dinner is often exciting, and the cabin that was making dinner, for the second year in a row, they were doing these melted cheese hors d'oeuvres for dinner, where it's a lot like what a fondue pot used to be like, but this is much more elegant, and there's huge things to put on top of your melted cheese and bread, and lots of vegetables and fruit, and of course, wonderful conversation. And the next morning, two things happened that are regular events during the week that were there. The part I call caring for my soul is the 90-minute to 2-hour hikes that are led by Carol, who's a recently retired botanist and forester. She's one of the 12 regular attenders and was one of the original retreaters and a Schifferstadt craftsperson. And my notes from past years, the first hike that I wrote about in 2016, so it wasn't my first year there, but it was the first year I recorded in my journal what it was like spending time there. And I wrote that those hikes seem to capture much of what's most important to the group as a whole, to see the retreat as getting away from the routine of family life or home life and into the outdoors. It's a chance to reconnect with old friends and share some common interests like nature hikes and crafting experiences. My notes from that year also say that Mary took me by myself to the what she called the oldest park structure in West Virginia, which was the old inn or lodge at Kekapan. It's a one-room cabin that was built in in the 1930s, it was expanded to include 12 sleeping rooms and a kitchen with a very nice camp dining room. And that building was memorable to me. It was impressive to me because in my notes, I'm also writing about the many trails that we explored, and most of them were passable even with snow on the ground, pretty safe trails. But that year, I was especially impressed with the ridge trail at Kekapen and the miles of stone steps and trails reinforced with stone pavings, these huge rocks that were moved from their original place to create stair steps and safe passage along high ridge paths that are very rocky and lots of sandy places that could be slippery, but potentially dangerous trails that have been remade by the CCC, the Civilian Conservation Corps. And I grew up in state parks that had similar structures and trails, especially in Western New York and up through Pennsylvania. And so those places are warming to me. They're important to me. And I like thinking about the people that worked on those trails over the years to maintain them and all the work that was done to start those trails originally. And this year I brought home bark plates of chestnut oak and 6-inch pitch pine cones from the forest floor that I picked up along the hikes that I took there this time. Rocks called sand rocks that eventually crumble into the sand that covers most of the trails, even at the highest elevations at Kekapen. I have seeds from two types of mountain mint and seeds from American pennyroyal that Carol the botanist pointed out to me, and we found, I think I actually found some seed in some of those dried flowers, even though it's late in the season for finding seeds. The wildlife has stripped most of the seed out of those wild plants. And then shells of hickory nuts, split hickory nuts that the wildlife has already cleaned out the insides of. So all of those experiences that I am aware of really grounding me at Kekapen are important and some of my favorite times there. Caring for my body, in addition to those hikes that are really good exercise for me, and I do a lot of walking every week here at home, but it's not hiking, it's walking mostly on flat surfaces. So hiking on those ridge trails is wonderful. That first morning, we also did yoga, and three of the 6 days I was there, we did yoga, and I participated each time. And our resident scientist is the leader for those sessions. They're wonderfully enriching and settling in experiences for me. I've participated almost every year in those sessions, but this was the first year that I really spent time thinking about how rich and beneficial those sessions are for me, and that really it would be so helpful for me, so good for me to practice yoga year round. And I could see how much improved I was in just 3 days after not getting much sleep for the week before. But the larger message is just how fast I can get out of shape, and how simple practices like daily yoga or even 3 times a week can really improve my quality of life and keep me healthy. The last section of this story is about caring for my community. I'm just checking to make sure I didn't miss something. One of the highlights of this particular reunion trip to Morgan County, to Berkeley Springs and the Cape and State Park and Oregon County in general, was the gifting of 15 trees and shrubs that I took with me as my gifting contributions to the 12 women there. These trees and shrubs were dug as volunteers from the gardens and backyards across the tri-state area around Hagerstown. They're a continuation of an experiment I started last fall. A woman I knew from the Unitarian Universalist Church in Hagerstown, where I hang out, a new widow who was asking for help getting her crazy, mad, meandering half acre that her house is perched on cleaned up before the memorial service that she was planning for her husband. And she asked me if I would help. She said there were strawberry plants taking over the stone paths of her garden. And wondering how much time this would require of me, I innocently asked, "How many strawberry plants?" She said, "Oh, I don't know, a lot, maybe 200. Well, that was daunting. So I recruited a younger, more energetic and more experienced gardener, the woman who I've come to think of as my gardening guru, Diana, to orchestrate and lead this cleanup effort. And she was more than equal to the task. We spent 4 hours on our knees back in the fall, and came away with more than 1,000 plants divided between us. So I alone had 6 flats with 300 strawberry plants crammed in layers on top of each other as I dug them up. Diana piled her plants in ordinary black garbage bags and dumped them in her car. She had at least 3 times the number of plants that I carried away. 100 of my plants went into the ground at my house. So, and I now have strawberries, lots of strawberries in the ground. And the rest went into small pots so that I could give them away to everyone who would take them. About 1/3 of the total of my plants went to friends and other church members. Some went to other gardeners. Diana's plants have gone to her gardening clients, and she has put a lot of them into the ground at her house. The potted strawberries that I had left from my lot, I loaded into my car and drove to Baltimore much later in the fall for a storytelling event. And I handed them out to families who'd come to hear children's stories. And that was such an enriching and really thought-provoking experience for me that I've been responding the requests for plants and discovering opportunities for foraging and collecting plants ever since. So this past week, the 12 women on the retreat at Kekapan State Park outside Berkeley Springs took home with them baby redbud trees, red twig, dogwoods, and 2 shrubby natives, American beautyberry and sweet pepperbush plants. And several of the women asked if I had more plants at home. They were by no means sated by the plants that I gave out. And the most requested were the red buds, which was interesting to me. 2 reasons, I think, for the particular popularity among this group of red bud trees. First, red buds were the best known of the 4 plants that I brought with me. And second, they are known as fairly impressive trees. They're understory trees, so they never get more than 20 feet high, and often they're much, much smaller than that because they're under taller woodland trees. And they generally take up less space than an oak or a maple. But they also put on a fabulous show of sherbet pink flowers every spring. And people who recognize the name redwood usually know how beautiful they are in the springtime. So every time I share a carload of plants with a new group of potential gardeners and earth scratchers, I'm really heartened by the enthusiasm of the recipients of these plants. I've also planted seeds of various types in pots and given them away as seedlings, But most of the gifting has come from volunteer seedlings, plants that come up in unexpected spots all on their own, from seeds dropped by birds or small rodents. They're just a, they just feel like bountiful treasure gifts, gifts from a benign and loving universe. And I'm just the conduit. I'm the hand that shares. But I don't own these plants. They're gifted to me to pass along from the natural world. And all by itself, that continuing revelation, that realization, is a recurring lesson. It sometimes brings tears to my eyes when I think about the reception that these plants get from people who are so eager to put them in their gardens, near their gardens, or even in pots within their house. I just get this sense of peace and understanding and gratitude by gifting them. The other thing I gave away at the Kekapan retreat was books, and I do that every year. This year I had a few children's books in the mix of about 50 hardbacks, paperbacks, and a few magazines. And I was surprised to learn that those easy reader books were the most in demand this year. The rest of the choicest books that were carried away were mostly lighthearted or funny novels, mysteries, romances. There was some Shakespeare and some historic fiction that were taken too. But the real benefit of that exchange is in my favor, because the process of gathering those books and taking them to Kekapan to share with those women requires me to take a hard look at all the print in my, the print storm that is my house, and wrestle with my conscience and admit that I'm not likely to need these books again. I'm probably not going to read them again, but even if I decide I do want something, the vast majority of these volumes that are in my house would be easy to replace. So it's immensely satisfying to watch books that I've enjoyed, or even the ones that I've not read, leave my house and move out into the world for somebody else to enjoy. And the ones that don't get chosen, the ones I bring home with me, again, from Kekapan, those must be second best in some way, at least to that particular group of readers. And that helps me, it makes it easier for me to move them away, to move them from my car to a used bookstore, or to the American Association of University Women's annual book sale, to their storage shed, or even to the Goodwill Donation Center, where, you know, I don't know, I've suspected based on conversations that I hear there at Goodwill that only 1 in 100 visitors reads anything at all, but they do have books for sale there, and they're always happy to take mine when I drop them off. So I'm just grateful to these 12 women who invite me every year to this event, this week-long retreat, and encourage me to think more deeply about my life, my ordinary home life, my ordinary time in the world, and have fun and be creative.
Wonderful. The hiking got me tired.
I did go on and on, didn't I?
No, just because I can't go for hikes. My legs won't put up with it.
Yeah.
I can barely go for a walk without having some problems. But I do appreciate the fact, you know, that people do that. And I used to. I used to run and run and run and run, you know.
Yeah, so the hike and the yoga, we're like two ends of the spectrum. One is about recovery, and one is about stretching yourself. And it's interesting.
Well, I think the yoga thing is very important, and I happen to be experienced with yoga, and I did yoga for a year with Terry in a class that she took from a woman by the name of Mary, who was a mentor of hers. And Terry does yoga every other day.
Mm-hmm. I know.
And my wife, and through no help from me, except that I stay out of her way, is in excellent shape. And she is a walker like you, you know, and I know the yoga is very important to her, extremely important to her, you know. In fact, before we left Pittsburgh area, she asked her teacher for permission to record yoga sessions. So she has 18 different yoga sessions. And she just goes through them in order. And when she goes up to her yoga room, which we're fortunate to have in this house as a separate place for her to have her yoga stuff, I always say to her, say hello to the ladies for me. Because for a year I did that and it was fun.
Thank you, Stash. Thanks for letting me go ramble on.
It's okay.
John, our station manager, is reminding me we're over time. So thanks to our listeners. You've been listening to the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour. I'm Fanny Crawford.
And I'm Stash Siokowski.
We're closing out. Thanks for listening to Community Radio broadcasting from Bolivar, West Virginia, and Martinsburg, West Virginia, and Hagerstown, Maryland. We are offering our listeners a window into the world of storytelling from traditional and non-traditional tellers, encouraging our listening community to share and tell and retell all of our stories.
Cool.
Stay tuned for
Bluegrass.
Bluegrass.